well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. I'm going to be talking with our friend Laura Carno from Faster, Colorado, about what's going on out there in the Rocky Mountain State, where SB3, which is the biggest, baddest gun ban bill, I think, that is out there this year, cleared its first legislative hurdle on Tuesday, a marathon session. But the gun ban bill passing out of committee in the state Senate. I think it might have one more committee before it hits the Senate floor. Already enough Senate co-sponsors that SB3 should pass. Now, this is the bill that would ban the sale, the manufacture, the purchase of any semi-automatic rifle or shotgun that can accept a detachable magazine. I mean, that's it. That's the new definition of assault weapon, right? A gas-operated semi-automatic firearm that can accept a detachable magazine, those would be prohibited, again, from manufacture, from sale, from purchasing. There is a grandfather clause in SB3 as it stands right now. So if you own a semi-automatic rifle or shotgun that can accept a detachable magazine, you would be allowed to continue to possess it, at least for now. Right. We know that that's what the next step would be, though. Go back and repeal that grandfather provision. Again, it's awful. This is a absolutely terrible bill, and it is the top priority of gun control advocates. So let's talk about that and more with Laura Carno from Faster, Colorado. Take a look and a listen. Laura, it's good to see you again. Thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Yeah, you too.
So SB3, let's start there. This semi-auto ban. Passing out of committee yesterday, right? First hearing, along party lines. I mean, this is kind of exactly what we expect. Do you think, it sounds to me like this already has the votes to get at least through the Senate, probably the House too, right? And yeah. I guess is the big question, what's Governor Polis going to do with this bill when it gets to his desk?
Yeah, so this went till almost midnight last night, which is why I could never be a member of the legislature. It's way past my bedtime. But the good news is that means that there were tons of people, not quite as many as we saw in 2013 with those gun control bills that kind of kicked everything off here in Colorado. But there was the main big room and then two overflow rooms that people rotated in and out of to testify. So it's good that lots of people showed up. There are enough Senate co-sponsors to say that once this gets to the Senate floor, it will pass the Senate. There are not enough House sponsors to say once this gets to the House floor, it'll definitely pass. The legislature is more left than Colorado is. And so it depends on what kind of districts, what kind of swing districts those House members are in. But to your question, as many of these things, many of the further left policy things, whether it's about guns or not, the question is always, what is Governor Polis going to do? Because he really, really, really wants to run for president. And there are things that might pass in blue Colorado and might be perfectly fine. But once you run a national campaign, especially in a general election, which he obviously would hope to get to, how do these things play in Peoria, as they say? And, gun control, especially something like this that appears to be the worst gun ban that any state has been looking at so far. I think that really is a question. And if he signs it, then is this a court battle?
Yeah, because, Polis is going to run as a Democrat, but Polis's brand, right, he's not Gavin Newsom. He's not Kathy Hochul, right? He bills himself, rightly or wrongly, as the sort of, left libertarian. And he has said, I guess, that, he's not generally in favor of hardware bans. But he also said that he didn't have any objection to this in theory, right? So he's definitely keeping his options open, yes. Which I suppose is, on the one hand, is good, right? Because it means that there might be room to convince and persuade the governor to veto this measure if it gets to his desk. But on the other hand, if you do describe yourself as a libertarian, if you do say, well, I'm not generally in favor of a hardware ban, then why would you be okay in theory with this? Because that's exactly what this is. This is a hardware ban. This is, as you say, the biggest gun ban bill that's been introduced this year. And if it passes, if it becomes law, I mean, this would be the most sweeping semi-auto ban in the country.
Right. So the governor's doing the weighing one thing in one hand and one thing in the other hand. And you're right. When you say rightly or wrongly, his brand is libertarian. I'm going to go with wrongly, living here. Coloradans are building big files of what are all of the things that Governor Polis has done that wouldn't classify as libertarian, whether capital L or small L libertarian, by the way, including some of his COVID era measures and, different things like that. Nothing about him is libertarian, except that once he said, I don't remember what it was that started him talking about himself as a libertarian. So this is on Coloradans to make sure to educate national audiences if Governor Polis decides to run for president.
Yeah. All right. So beyond SB3, because that's sucking up a lot of oxygen in the room, I'm curious, I mean, are there other gun control bills out there? Is there any talk about going after armed school staff in Colorado? Because I know that was something that was under consideration last year.
Yeah. So last year, we talked about it here on your show, the legislature tried to, there's a couple of things. One, they had a bill to go after so-called sensitive spaces, and that bill got skinnied down to just a few places. I still don't agree with it, but it was significantly skinnied down. They took out of that sensitive spaces bill the armed staff component. And when they took that out for like 14 seconds, I was like, oh, it's because we have done such a good job educating the legislature. No, they gave us our own bill. That didn't even make it out of a Democrat House Education Committee. The sponsor was forced to pull her own bill in a fairly angry way. But she didn't have the votes on her own committee. The inside baseball on it is she refused to meet with stakeholders. And that is still considered good manners, even if you think you know that you've got the votes. Not meeting with stakeholders is still just considered bad form. So we haven't seen anything this year. We haven't heard anything this year. But as we know, many legislatures put forth bills like that, like a prohibition on campus carry, if there's a school shooting and we are in the middle of the school year. So, but we've had to continue to retain our lobbyists because we have to have some representation there at the Capitol. The one good bill that's being run this year, I believe it's by Representative Armagost again, is more stringent penalties for people who steal guns and commit crimes with guns. So that makes very good common sense to people who are law and order. It should make good common sense on both sides of the aisle. It was killed last year. And when we look at, hey, bad guy used a gun to commit a crime or bad guy stole a gun, we should prosecute those people to the fullest extent of the law. We'll see where that one goes. But this is the big one, and it's interesting that they're doing it very early in the year as opposed to very late in the legislative session. I don't know what to make of that, but it's just notable.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of that either. I mean, we've seen Rhode Island, I think, is another state that's got this sort of, this is based on the Go Safe Act, SB3 is. This was the bill that was introduced by Martin Heinrich and Angus King in Congress, basically treating every gas-operated semi-automatic firearm that can accept a detachable magazine, right? That's the new definition of assault weapon. I think we've got something similar introduced in Rhode Island. And frankly, I wouldn't be surprised if we see, some revisions in states that already have these sorts of semi-auto bans in place, California, Illinois, if they go back and revise them to have this sort of all-encompassing language like what we're seeing in Colorado. This is, I think, the top priority for the gun control lobby this year. We're looking at the Supreme Court. Are they going to hear a case dealing with a ban on so-called assault weapons? The court's keeping us in suspense. And I think that, you know, from the gun control lobby's perspective, they're full speed ahead. Let's put as many of these bans in place before the Supreme Court takes up this issue. Right. And let's have these bans be as big and all encompassing as possible. So I think it is going to be a priority, not only in Colorado, but, you know, in blue states around the country. And that's why, you know, the gun owners, no matter where you live, you need to be paying attention to what's going on in Colorado, because this fight is likely coming to a state near you, if not the state where you live.
Right. Yeah, you're exactly right. And, you know, there's the constitutionality angle. There's also the practicality angle. And this is something that I would suggest folks can talk to their friends about who don't follow the politics and don't think about constitutional versus not constitutional. But, you know, when you and I first started our interviews back in 2013, when the gun control, the big package of Bloomberg gun control bills were going through here in Colorado, they promised that these gun control bills would make us safer. They were eventually passed into law. So we now have 12 years to say they passed these gun control bills. There was if you'll remember, a desert of, you know, 5-6 years when nobody offered any gun control bills in the Colorado legislature after we recalled two state senators in 2013. But we have 12 years to say, did those gun control bills, and then after the desert, there were more gun control bills, did they make Coloradans safer or less safe? And so this is the question to ask of your friends who don't care about constitutionality issues, and there are those people. It has made Colorado significantly less safe. On paper, FBI statistics, Colorado Bureau of Investigation statistics, Colorado is significantly less safe in all categories, in assaults, in murders, in rapes, in all of those violent crimes, crimes with firearms. So you look at these crimes and you say, I'm sorry, if all of these gun control laws were supposed to work and keep us safer, how did these 23 guys who committed crimes with firearms, how did they get those guns? We have to ask those questions. It's not working to keep people safer.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And again, part of that, I think, also comes into, you know, the criminal justice reforms come into play, too. Right. Because it's not just that the Democrat majority has said, OK, we're going to make the state a safer place by going after law abiding gun owners. They've also said we're not going to go after criminals. Right. The bill that you mentioned last year that would have increased the penalty for, you know, stealing a gun and possessing a stolen gun. Democrats did not get on board with that. They did not want to punish people who are stealing firearms, right? I mean, that was very much the case of, well, we don't want to put these people in prison. I mean, my God, it's just going to make things worse. So, you know, you've got this sort of double whammy, right, where the lawful gun owner is seen as a problem that needs to be solved. The violent criminal is seen as a misunderstood, you know, individual who just needs more help and hugs, right? And sure. I think when you have that sort of dichotomy at play, yeah, we shouldn't be surprised that things are moving in the wrong direction in Colorado and have been for a long time.
Exactly. And one of the pieces I listened to a big chunk of the hearing yesterday, obviously I have bedtime, but one of the things that they had talked about, and they had alluded to an amendment that was coming that exempted Hollywood. So if you are coming here from Hollywood to make a movie, then you are exempted from this law. And you know, following comments on social media during the hearing, and the overwhelming response to that was, so you will make exceptions for Hollywood, but not for law-abiding gun owners. And by the way, Hollywood guns have killed more people than my gun was a lot of people were saying that, referring to, you know, the scene of Rust when somebody lost her life.
Yeah.
And so it was just this, I'm sorry, are you people tone deaf? Do you not understand the message that you're giving to your constituents? And by the way, it's not just Republicans who are gun owners. Democrats are gun owners too in Colorado. So it was pretty interesting, a pretty interesting hearing to tune into.
Well, we will be paying close attention to what's going on with SB3. We'd love to have you back again in the near future. And
you bet.
Laura, again, thanks for everything you're doing there, not only protecting our Second Amendment rights, but making sure that students and staff are protected as well with Faster Colorado. And Look forward to talking to you again very soon, my friend.
Sounds great. Thanks so much.
My thanks to Laura for joining us on the program. We will obviously be having her back again very soon as we continue to keep our eye on SB3. This is just such a, it is what it is, right? We know it's unconstitutional. Banning an entire class of firearms, some of the most commonly owned firearms in the country. But again, as long as the Supreme Court is silent, gun control groups are going to take advantage of that. Anti-gun politicians are going to take advantage of that silence. They're going to try to ram this through in as many states as possible. All right, let's turn our attention now to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there with a case out of Florida where Tampa's police fatally shot a man after a rampage that killed one and injured six involving a vehicle. By the way, speaking of, hardware bans, we got to go after the dangerous individual, not any particular hardware. In this case, a gentleman named Jeremiah Lewis Bailey was the guy who was responsible for this rampage in his Honda, where he struck and killed one person, injured three more, didn't know any of them. Officers ended up pursuing Bailey onto an interstate, pushed his Honda into a spin, and ultimately fatally shot him after he appeared to reach for something when officers approached his car. There were three officers who were injured during the shooting, according to police, possibly by ricocheting rounds or flying debris. This all started when Bailey got into a dispute with a stranger at a store in South Tampa. It was at a Dollar General. Apparently, Bailey's car was blocking a guy from using his own car to get into the business. There was an argument. Bailey then moved his car. The other man left, but Bailey followed the guy to a home, and Bailey ended up hitting the victim with the car twice. While that was happening, a friend of that victim fired a gun to stop Bailey, who then drove off. A short time later, the vehicle being driven by Bailey left the roadway, ended up hitting a 43-year-old named Jesse Rickett, causing serious head injuries. He then intentionally struck and killed a man who was walking down the street. I mean, again, this is just, it was a rampage. And as it turns out, Jeremiah Bailey was known to police. Over the past 20 years, he has had repeated run-ins with the law, most of them nonviolent offenses, loitering, prowling, grand theft, operating a motor vehicle without a license, giving false information to a pawnbroker, stealing his stolen property. 2012, he was found guilty of battery on a medical care provider. And then in 2019, Bailey spent about 3.5 years in prison for an aggravated battery conviction where he attacked a Outback Steakhouse manager, hitting him with a beer glass, cutting the man's face, shoving him against a wall, then punching him. At the time, Bailey was declared incompetent to stand trial. His attorney said that he was suffering from mental health issues. He did return to court a few months later. After a judge declared him to be restored to competency, he then pleaded no contest to the battery charges and went to prison for, again, about 3.5 years. He was supposed to report to a mental health facility, though, upon his release. He was also required to take medication. It is unclear whether or not that actually happened. After he was released from prison in October of 2022, he was placed on probation. He eventually requested early termination of that probation, arguing that he had no violations. And prosecutors opposed that request, noting his violent criminal history. I don't think that the request was granted. But again, the question is, should Mr. Bailey have been out at that point, particularly if there were concerns that he was not taking his medication, that he was not getting the mental health treatment that he was supposed to be receiving as part of his probation? And those, unfortunately, are questions that have yet to be answered. Now, today's Armed Citizen story from Pennsylvania, where a neighbor ended up saving a man who was being attacked by a bear. Now, this story happened a couple of days ago. I confess I missed it at the time. But good gracious, I mean, you talk about a scary situation. You know, black bears are generally not aggressive. But in this case, there was a juvenile black bear that had been kind of scared out of a parking lot there in Pennsylvania, and then started walking up this trail. Andrew Neerer is coming back from a grocery store, and the black bear decided to charge him. Neerer tried to get away. He didn't run. By the way, he was very calm. He tried to just kind of move around the bear, but eventually the black bear jumped on him, took him to the ground. And that's when Neerer's neighbor, Mike Bramich, pulled out a firearm, saw what was going on, pulled out a gun, and shot the black bear, saving Neerer's life. Neerer expressed his thanks to his neighbor. He said it could have been a lot worse. He said he was still saddened by the outcome of the attack. He said, luckily he saved me and shot the bear. He said, I feel bad for the bear because they really don't bother you that much. And again, generally speaking, that might be the case. But when you are attacked, you do have the right to protect yourself from an aggressive bear. And in this case, even though Neerer didn't have the ability to do so, his neighbor in the right place at the right time, willing to do the right thing, did have the presence of mind and the ability to stop that attack and save a life. Finally, today's good deed of the day, also in the right place, at the right time, willing to do the right thing. A Cisco, Texas man was recently honored for helping to assist a police officer during an arrest. John Hines is the man's name, recognized by the Cisco Police Department for his actions. Late last month, December 30th, the Cisco police says that Hines acted swiftly in assisting a Cisco police officer in apprehending a violent fugitive who was actively resisting arrest. His brave actions prevented the suspect from possible escape, as well as keeping the officer from being seriously injured. And this week, Chief Kenneth Preston presented Hines with a letter of appreciation, as well as a plaque and a challenge coin. It was a guy named Stephen Ray Schuyler was the violent individual in question. According to authorities, he ran from police on December the 30th. He assaulted an officer during his arrest. And that's when Hines saw what was going on and came to the aid of that officer, helping to get Schuyler under control long enough for additional officers to take him into custody. Cisco PD again saying his brave actions, keeping that officer from being seriously injured, and John Hines getting that recognition from the local police department. So again, in the right place at the right time, willing able to do the right thing. John, we thank you for your very, very good deed. All right, that's going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program as always. Looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow. But be sure to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day. We're keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. Armed citizen stories, the latest legislation, litigation, regulation, and more. It's all right there for you at BearingArms.com. And if you like what you see, I'd encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member. Yeah, you get all kinds of great benefits, but you'll also be supporting the independent pro-Second Amendment journalism that we're doing at Bearing Arms. We certainly do appreciate your support. Have a great Hump Day Wednesday. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well. Be safe. And be free.